This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
And it's going to talk about some of the great events coming up and about the work that they do. Before we jump into that, though, I want to just make a couple of announcements for folks. If you're interested in getting involved with your community radio station, KBOO, why don't you come down and join us? You can go through a volunteer orientation and find out more about how to make radio. We're always looking for more content, so get involved. And you can find Out Loud on Facebook and Twitter as well. Just a couple of quick announcements. As everyone probably knows, Pride's coming up, and June's going to be a very exciting month. The Supreme Court's expected to make some significant rulings in regard to marriage equality. And tied with that, some of the work that Oregon United for Marriage is doing is going to be launching their kickoff campaign, the Summer of Love, for the summer. And on June 1st, there's going to be events all around the state. There's going to be an event in Portland that's going to take place at Sunnyside Church, which is at 3520 Southeast Yamhill, on June 1st from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And just come on down, get excited. And, you know, there's been a great wave of marriage equality in the last few weeks. If you haven't noticed, Rhode Island and Delaware and just recently Minnesota won the freedom to marry. So let's keep it going. Also, there's been an updated transgender healthcare toolkit that's been released that you can find on the basicrights.org website, which is a great resource for folks wanting to self-advocate for healthcare with their employers. But enough announcements. Khalil, welcome again.
Hey.
So, Khalil, I was just hoping you could talk to us just a little bit about, you know, what the Racial Justice and Alliance Building Program is, and kind of like maybe give us a little bit of background on the work you do.
Yeah, definitely. So the Racial Justice and Alliance Building Program is one of the programs within Basic Rights Oregon, and some of the main ways that the program operates is to centralize the leadership of LGBT people of color within our communities, and to lift up their experiences, their trials and triumphs, and some of the unique experience that folks have around being LGBT people of color within our communities. Also, the work that we do within the program is to be a strong ally and a partner on racial justice issues and racial justice campaigns within the state of Oregon and throughout, and to educate straight communities of color around LGBT people of color and to raise awareness around our community and our issues and experiences, and also to educate our base, the Basic Rights Oregon base, around racial justice issues that impact all of our communities and around some of the unique experiences and issues that LGBT people of color are facing.
And could you just give us some examples, for example, of how we raise up the leadership of people of color and how we work with, you know, the alliances and that kind of thing?
Yeah, definitely. So one of the key ways that we do that work is within our families, volunteer leadership team, and it's an advocacy team that works to do a lot of work within our community and within our families. It's LGBT people of color and straight allies of color that come together to really do some skill building and analysis building around issues, to work to build community amongst each other, and also to lift up the experiences that folks are facing within our community, and to really build our base to be able to take action on issues that impact us around racial justice.
Yeah, and could you just speak to the videos that were released?
Yeah, that's also one of the ways that we do the education piece and to raise awareness around LGBT people of color. And we have released four videos to date, four incredibly amazing videos that talk about the trials and triumphs, the real life experiences that folks face being part of LGBT families of color. And we have, like I said, we have four videos, and they are kind of community specific. So we have an African American video and Latino specific video and Asian Pacific Islander video that we created, and most recently we have a Native Two-Spirit video that talks about has families sharing their stories, those are available on our website at basicrights.org, and you can also find them on YouTube as well. They have been highly remarked on throughout the country and here in the state, and have been a really good way to start conversations and to talk to folks about some of these issues.
Yeah, bring a tissue.
Yes, definitely.
They've been viewed like tens of thousands of times too. It's just, and they're trans inclusive. It's amazing. It's really, really profound work. And could you just speak to some of the alliance building work that we do?
Yeah, so, as I said, we part of the Racial Justice and Alliance Building Program is to really partner with organizations within communities of color. So we have a strong partnership with several organizations, including CASA Oregon, which is the largest immigration rights organization here in the state, and with the Urban League of Portland, with APANO, and with Partnership for Safety and Justice, and we partner with those organizations as well as other organizations around racial justice issues that impact all of our lives, and issues around police accountability and tuition equity and cultural competency. And so we have had some exciting successes around those issues and building those partnerships and building those relationships, and some very recent exciting wins that have happened in the legislature this year alone. So it's very exciting.
Yeah. Tuition equity, if folks aren't familiar with that, could you just give us a little backdrop on what that means?
The tuition equity bill basically makes it really provides access for students to achieve higher education, and some of the details within that bill is to provide in-state tuition for students within the state of Oregon that are undocumented, and really provides a way for folks to have some equity and equal access to be able to attain higher education and to be successful in their lives and to not have to have those barriers that have been put in front of folks for so long that are really unfair practices that that we have been able to dismantle, which is really important and impacts so many folks, people's lives in many different ways. So it's really great to bring some equity to our higher education and to be able to provide that for folks.
Yeah, and maybe the cultural competency, just a little.
Yeah, and that the cultural competency bill, which very exciting, it just passed on the House and the Senate, and so it's on its way to the governor to sign. Get ready, get your pen ready, Governor Kitzhafer. and the cultural competency bill, the gist of it, is that it's just health care for folks in our community, and it will be tracking the education of providers and healthcare providers and healthcare professionals. And what we know is that a lot of the disparities that happen in our healthcare and in our healthcare system and in the healthcare that is provided to folks and that folks are experiencing is in due to folks not being competent around how to be a good provider to many different folks that of their clients that they are dealing with on a regular basis. So, they have these patients that they are not necessarily sufficient in being able to provide the best care to them. And, we all should have equitable and just health care. And so it's really important to be able to support that.
Yeah, that's great. And I was hoping you could just talk about what the race wedge is, and then also about Lift Every Voice.
Yeah, so the race wedge is kind of in a nutshell, it's a tactic that is used to really divide communities and to divide folks around an issue to help the opposition really a tactic that the opposition used to win around key issues. And what the race wedge does is it really does, it doesn't recognize the intersections that folks are experiencing, and it doesn't recognize the our whole selves and who we are in this world and as we like move and live in the world. And so kind of an example of that is that recently there were some documents leaked from the National Organization for Marriage that explicitly said that they would target African Americans and straight African Americans to be spokespeople against the freedom to marry and marriage equality, and in hopes that that would ignite LGBT white Americans to call them out as being bigots and really drive a wedge between those two groups, you know, not recognizing that, you know, me as a Black male and many other people in our community, that there are, you know, not recognizing the different identities that we hold, that there are folks that are African American and LGBT at the same time. And so it forces folks to kind of choose identities over another. And it also pits communities against each other when in actuality, we all are should be working together to overcome some of the issues that we're facing in our communities.
Yeah, they kind of do that with faith, too, I've noticed. You know, they kind of act like there aren't LGBT people who are people of faith. Somehow there's this division, you know, but yeah. When we know the reality is that many of us are people of faith and many of us are LGBT people of color. So,
yeah, definitely, which was, you know, it's an interesting point because in the Lift Every Voice report, which I think we'll talk about more in a second, but it was a report that was partnership with PFLAG, Portland Black Chapter, and the Urban League of Portland. And in the report, it touched on faith and spirituality. And the results from the focus groups and the survey really identified and really reinforced what we already know, that African American LGBT folks, specifically Oregonians, which was who was surveyed in the report, have a very strong tie to their faith and their spirituality, and have a very strong connection to that. So, you know, we know when those wedges are drawn between those communities, that's just it's just a falsehood that you know, serves to like drive people apart, and we have to really change that narrative and call it out for what it is. And it's not true, and it's not the reality of what we know people are feeling and living and what their beliefs are.
Awesome. Thanks, Khalil. And could you talk about the report then, the Lift Every Voice, and how that came about and just kind of the background?
Yeah. So in 2009, the Urban League of Portland released the State of Black Oregon, which was a very historic report that really uncovered some of the glaring disparities that African Americans experience within the state of Oregon around several different issue areas, including like housing and employment and healthcare. And it was a really important tool and resource to really have to share with folks around that data, that what folks are experiencing. And so PFLAG Portland Black Chapter reached out to the Urban League to partner with them on the Lift Every Voice report to include LGBT African Americans, Oregonians, and the experiences and disparities that folks, LGBT African Americans, are experiencing here in Oregon. And so it was really a first of its kind report that has been done here, and a great tool and a resource as well to kind of reinforce some of the information that we already know, but really to lift up the voices of a community that is often silenced, you know, that is dealing with really unique disparities and some really startling and harsh disparities every day. And so it's really important to validate what folks are experiencing and also to give voice to folks who aren't often heard, and to say we want to know what you're experiencing. We want to what you're experiencing is important to know and share, and to have that information to be able to really break down some of those disparities and overcome some of those barriers and obstacles that folks are experiencing.
Oh yeah, thank you. And our engineer asked me to ask you a question, so
okay,
I'm going to.
Okay, engineer.
Thanks, Rebecca. We just were curious, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about a recent unfortunate incident involving a performer who came to Portland and was wanting to perform as with what is called blackface, and I'm sure everyone knows what that is, but it was, you know, there was a group of folks who stood up in our community and said, no, we don't want that here, and just wondered what your thoughts were about that whole controversy.
Yeah, I think that incident and incident and, you know, what occurred from that really kind of brought to head and brought to light some of the, you know, racism that is experienced here in Oregon and, you know, across the country. And it really kind of started a conversation around some of those issues that aren't necessarily talked about all the time. And often in Oregon, it's not necessarily on the forefront of folks' thought processes are on their you know, conscience all the time, in a state that is often viewed as very progressive. And so I think that it really sparked some conversation and some actions from folks in the community to really call out this incident for what it is, and it has been also a way to move further action around trying to, like, dismantle racism and really take a close look at the racism that is experienced here in Oregon, but and also more specifically within the LGBTQ community that isn't addressed all the time. And so it has been it brought that to the head, it brought that to light, and folks have been able to really have conversations around that and start to and do some really heavy work around that and trying to deal with those issues and address those issues and hopefully make some progress in healing our communities.
Thanks, Khalil. And we only have a couple of minutes left, and I was hoping we could talk about some of the great events that are coming up.
Yes, mark your calendars. We have some great things happening. Very recently coming up is May 23rd is a LGBT People of Color and Allies event happening. It's called Sing for Your Life. It's Thursday, May 23rd. It'll be at 8 p.m. at the Grand Cafe. And this event is being hosted by the Racial Justice and Alliance Building Volunteer Leadership Team, which I referenced before, our families. And so one of the ways that our families works is to really build community and provide those spaces in our community for LGBT people of color and allies. And so it's going to be a fun karaoke and dance party, like I said, 8 o'clock at the Grand Cafe, Thursday, May 23rd. So hope folks will come out and support that and come have a good time and sing some karaoke and get on the dance floor. And it's going to be a lot of fun. And you can find details about that on basicrights.org and also on Facebook.
Awesome. Thanks. And did you want to talk about that?
Coming up is our annual Pride dance party, and this will be rice beans. It's called Rice Beans and Collard Greens, and it's the Racial Justice and Alliance Building. It's a fundraiser and a dance party for LGBT people of color, our friends and family, and that is going to be Friday, June 21st. So it's a way to end out Pride Month with a great big party and a celebration, and it's in partnership with Pride Northwest and Asian Pacific Islander Pride and Portland Latino Gay Pride and Portland Black Pride and Portland Two-Spirit Society. So it's going to be, it's always a fun event. It's a great time for people to come out. So hopefully folks will come out to that on June 21st.
Awesome. And then just finally, if you could just talk a little bit about your great work with Portland PFLAG Black Chapter.
Yeah, PFLAG Portland Black Chapter. We are a fairly young organization. We have been around for just over 4 years. We just had our 4-year anniversary in February. It was a great event. And we are the first African-American specific chapter in the country, which is really exciting to hold that here and to be a part of that work. And basically, we provide support and resources and education and advocacy for the African-American LGBT folks in our community and parents, friends, and family of LGBT African Americans. And we do that through a lot of different ways. And please check us out on our website at pflagpdx.org and also on our Facebook, PFLAG Portland Black Chapter. But just to let you know what's coming down very recently, our upcoming is Portland Black Pride, which PFLAG Portland Black Chapter has sponsored Portland Black Pride for the last few years. This will be our third year sponsoring Portland Black Pride. You can find out details around that also on the Portland Black Pride Facebook page and also at portlandblackpride@gmail.com. But it is June 19th to June 23rd, and we have a week of events, lots of great events. We have a Portland Black Pride Summit and our highly anticipated Families of Color Day Out on Sunday, June 23rd, and lots of events throughout. We're throwing a ball, so get your act together and ready for the ball. It's going to be really, really exciting and really fun. So
awesome. Thank you so much for joining us, Khalil.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, now we're going to turn to Tammy Why Not does a monthly horoscope. She'll read your stars for us every month. So that's going to be our next segment. And then we're going to go right into some syndicated audio. It's a program called This Way Out, which is going to give us an update on the great events happening in Minnesota. So thanks for listening and have a really wonderful night.
Tammy's telescope for May 2013. It's May and it's cray, y'all. We're in the midst of an eclipse sandwich that's stirring up winds of change. And if you're in the Pacific Northwest, May is feeling a little like summer. Or shall I say mummer? Well, it's time to scoot on to the sun sign forecast, so buckle up. Aries, it's May, you little lamb chop, and you've got bells on the brain. Even though you've got loads of cash rolling your way, it seems like there's just as much rolling out. Have a little patience, because this last eclipse should put a cork in that leaky piggy bank. Save some moolah and pack your bags, because at the end of the month, it's trips ahoy. Taurus. This month is your style, Taurus, because a mess of planets showed up for your birthday party, and they all brought presents. Of course, there are a few surprise guests in the form of eclipses, but your feathers don't ruffle easily. In fact, this last solar eclipse will open doors for you, and the lunar one on the 25th will put money right where you want it, in your back pocket. Gemini. Hey there, twinsy. You've been out of the limelight for a spell, quietly wrestling with a demon or two, and your friends seem to think you're MIA. Though you currently come off as catatonic, under the hood, your subconscious mind is spinning like a 16-cylinder. That's all going to change around the 21st when the planets start falling like dominoes into your sign. By month's end, lucky Jupiter and sweet Venus give you a big old kiss and some parting gifts. So get ready to snap out of it and step into the light, doll baby. Cancer. Ooh, Cancer. You feel like saving the world one cocktail party at a time. This month, your social life has been taking off like a Learjet, and you're sitting up in first class with a Mai Tai. Though hobnobbing with your pals is a cinch now, your love life will require more effort thanks to grumpy Saturn and pesky Pluto. The party should slow down by the end of the month when the planets stack up in your sphere of quiet contemplation. So hook up that hammock and grab your candle, Cancer. Leo. Oh, Leo, you have been so busy lately that you haven't had time to dig around in anyone else's litter box. You've been working your paws to the bone and watching all the other animals laugh and play. Don't worry your pretty little mane, because once the sun switches from Taurus to Gemini, you'll have some free time to prowl the Serengeti with the other big cats, and maybe play with a big old ball of yarn and some catnip. Virgo. You run a tight ship, Virgo, and sometimes you get bogged down with details. But this month, you finally get to dream big. If you haven't signed up for school, gone on an island adventure, or finalized that book deal, you better do it before the 21st, because afterwards, you'll be back to the grind with your boss cap on. Libra, you've been working on your credit rating in and out of the sack all month, as you strive to get a handle on your resources. And even if you make headway, you find that your soul craves something more deep. Well, you will have the answer by month's end as you catch wind of something more exotic and adventurous. If it's a physical destination, why not book a trip for two on your visa and get foreign? Scorpio. You're experiencing a little resistance from your partner as of late, and it may be because you're afraid to give up the reins now and then. Normally, the world would fall apart if you weren't in charge, but now you need to lean on someone else, and that's okay. After the 21st, you'll feel your power coming back, and you'll be rip-roaring and ready to dig through other people's garbage again. On the 25th, hide the credit cards and start saving for a rainy day. That could be tomorrow. Sagittarius, is your job holding you hostage and your vim and vigor taking a nosedive? Normally you're as healthy and happy-go-lucky as a horse, Sag, but right now you could use a cosmic tune-up and some new horseshoes. Don't fret, because the stars are coming to your rescue in the form of an eclipse and your sign on the 25th and a tryst between your ruling planet and lovely Venus on the 28th. And before you know it, that barbed wire will come down and you'll have greener pastures to meander. Capricorn. It's an action-packed month, Capricorn. A lineup of planets and fellow Earth sign Taurus is unlocking your amorous nature. And you might be surprised at how you loosen up and gasp. Have a little fun. However, it's not all easy-peasy carefree, because Pluto and Uranus are shaking things up at home, at work, and in your personal life. So don't get too distracted that you miss something on your security cam. If anything, you should dust off those plans and work on your long-range goals. You'll need to have a game plan in place before the sun moves into Gemini and fills your days with distractions. Aquarius. It's home on the range for you, Aquarius, and you've been trying to cozify your cave so you can tune out all the noise and crazy vibes from work and the world at large. Usually you're the whistleblower that wants to save humanity, but for the time being, you need to save your sanity. After the sun slips into fellow air sign Gemini on the 21st, your batteries should be recharged and ready for a spring fling or two. The lunar eclipse on the 28th will reconnect you with friends and lovers. Last but not least, it's good old Pisces. You've had your head in a book since May took off, and you can't seem to close that laptop either. That's fine and dandy because the planets in Taurus are turning you into a knowledge sponge. Just be sure to come up for air and say hello. Taurus is Earth, and it rules how you talk to people, so what better time than now to communicate your boundaries? As a water sign, you need boundaries, or else your feelings will go out with the tides. Just make sure you tell folks when you're sober. Later in the month, a lunar eclipse helps you find balance between happy homemaking and working hard for your money. Well, that's all I got now for this month, so I guess I'll be seeing you in June sometime. Keep looking at the stars, y'all. Toodaloo.
My partner and I have a six-year-old, and we want to let folks know how much we appreciate the House and the Senate being courageous and taking a vote to recognize our family.
I'm going to be a married man in Minnesota.
Homosexual-themed pornography is extremely accessible to young people if they ever visit any websites covering the gay agenda as news.
The fact that people cannot accept gays and lesbians is almost disgusting.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. International Actions Oppose Homo and Transphobia, Minnesota makes it a U.S. marriage equality dozen, and We Might Make You Gay, But Lesbian Moms Make You Smart. Those stories and more this week, because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Jason Proctor.
And I'm Natalie Peoples.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending May 18th, 2013. The annual International Day Against Homophobia and Transphobia, originally nicknamed Idaho, with the T added in recent years, was observed in more than 100 countries on May 17th. The event was created in 2004 to mark that date in 1990 when the World Health Organization officially removed homosexuality from its list of mental disorders. The United Nations released an official video message to mark the day called The Riddle that included comments by both the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Navi Pillay, and UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon.
Every nation is obligated by international human rights law to protect all lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people from torture, discrimination, and violence.
The United Nations has one simple message to the millions of LGBT people around the world.
You are not alone. You are not alone.
There were a variety of International Day Against Homophobia and Transphobia events across Asia. Press conferences, panel discussions, and flash mobs focusing on anti-LGBT bias and violence were held in Burma, Thailand, the Philippines, Cambodia, Hong Kong, Singapore, Vietnam, and India. But police in Nairobi stopped a march through the Kenyan capital on May 17th before it could get started, even though a permit had originally been issued for it. One of the organizers told Gay Star News that authorities said that the procession would be promoting homosexuality, which is a criminal offense in the African country. Police in St. Petersburg also shut down a rally in the city's main park after about 10 minutes for what they called health and safety reasons, after some 150 counter-protesters threw smoke pellets and small stones at about the same number of activists. It was nevertheless described as one of the largest public demonstrations for LGBT rights ever held in Russia.
The violence was far worse in Russia's southern neighbor, the Eurasian nation of Georgia. Thousands of anti-gay demonstrators, led by Christian Orthodox priests, broke through police barricades and attacked about 50 LGBT activists at a May 17th rally in the capital city of Tbilisi. According to Amnesty International, 17 people were injured, including 3 policemen and a journalist. 12 required hospitalization. Police put most of the LGBT activists on buses that were hastily driven away from the city center. Some of the attackers chased the buses, trying to break the windows with metal gratings, trash cans, and rocks. Activists who didn't make it onto the buses were reportedly pursued down streets or trapped in shops by angry mobs chanting anti-gay slogans. Government officials in Georgia, which is a candidate to join the European Union, condemned the violence, but critics said that the police failed to provide adequate security for the event. A similar rally held last year ended the same way.
About 300 anti-gay demonstrators protested a proposed bill in the Ukrainian parliament this week that would have banned workplace discrimination based on sexual orientation. The Ukraine is also a European Union wannabe, and its leaders want to bring the country's laws into line with EU standards. Following the protest in Kiev, however, the anti-bias bill was shelved indefinitely.
According to a survey by the European Union's Fundamental Rights Agency, released a few days prior to the International Day Against Homophobia and Transphobia, virtually one in two LGBT people on the continent say that they've been discriminated against or attacked in the last 12 months for being who they are. The poll of more than 93,000 people, described as the first ever such large-scale survey, found younger and poorer LGBT people were the most frequent targets of discrimination or harassment. More than half of those who said they'd been physically assaulted didn't report it to the authorities because they feared an indifferent or hostile response.
There are conflicting reports about the sexual orientation of a young man who was brutally tortured and murdered this week in the Russian city of Volgograd. 23-year-old Vladislav Tornovoy was raped with broken beer bottles and his skull had been crushed with a large stone. Two of the victim's longtime friends are in custody. According to reports, they attacked Tornovoy after he came out to them while they were all drinking together. Some city officials have classified the murder as a hate crime, a rare designation in Russia. But according to a report in Pink News, both another friend of the young man and his parents insist that Tornovoy was not gay.
In happier news for LGBT people this week, Brazil's National Council of Justice ordered notary publics to register the civil unions of same-gender couples and to register them as civil marriages if couples request it. The nation's Supreme Federal Tribunal ruled in 2011 that lesbian and gay couples should be able to enter into legally recognized civil unions, even though they don't offer all of the rights of civil marriage. Some notary publics, who not only certify but also carry out marriage ceremonies in Brazil, have refused to comply with the High Court's civil unions ruling. The Council of Justice, led by High Court Chief Justice Joaquin Barbosa, voted 14-1 on May 14th to issue the order. Right-wing evangelical Christian lawmakers are threatening a court challenge. But legal scholars in Brazil say that the Council of Justice ruling virtually sanctions civil marriage for gay and lesbian couples across Latin America's largest nation. According to the Associated Press, 14 of Brazil's 27 states already offer civil marriage licenses to same-gender couples. If the Council of Justice order stands, the entire country would be the third in South America, after Argentina and Uruguay, to open civil marriage to all of its same-gender couples.
France's Constitutional Council, that nation's highest judicial body, has approved the marriage equality and adoption rights legislation that was passed in Parliament on April 23rd. The May 17th High Court ruling rebuffed the challenge by right-wing lawmakers and paved the way for the speedy signature on May 18th of President François Hollande, who had made marriage equality a key issue during his election campaign. While strident opposition to the measure still festers, wedding bells should begin to ring for French lesbian and gay couples as soon as May 29th. France will become the 14th nation to offer civil marriage to its same-gender couples.
Minnesota has become the 12th U.S. state, along with the District of Columbia, with marriage equality, bolstered by the rejection in November by Minnesota voters of a proposed constitutional amendment to define marriage in the state as exclusively heterosexual. Out State Representative Karen Clark and State Senator Scott Dibble introduced House File 1054 in their respective chambers. The Democrat-dominated House voted for its approval on May 9th, mostly along party lines. The State Senate followed suit on May 13th. Clark and Dibble joined a celebratory Governor Mark Dayton as he signed the legislation into law on the front steps of the state capitol in St. Paul on May 14th. The first marriage licenses for gay and lesbian couples will be issued on August 1st, although there were reports that a mandatory waiting period might delay the first wedding ceremonies until a few days thereafter.
It was a mixed bag this week for same-gender couples in Italy. the new government of Prime Minister Enrico Letta quashed the proposal by its own Equality Minister Josefa Edom to create some form of civil unions for same-gender couples. Edom told the Italian newspaper La Repubblica that, "We don't want Class B citizens. All citizens should have the same rights and the same duties." But Letta quickly rejected that notion, stating flatly that the legal recognition of same-gender couples is not on the government's agenda.
Meanwhile, deputies in Italy's lower house of parliament voted on May 14th to extend health benefits to their members' same-gender partners. Even though lesbian and gay couples are not legally recognized in the country, MPs can now have their health insurance coverage extended to the man or the woman they live with. Passage of the measure was spearheaded by out deputy Ivan Scalfarotto, who wanted his own partner protected. Left-wing deputy Alessandro Zan joined several LGBT activists to complain, however, that this right can't only be a privilege for MPs. There are many other gay and lesbian couples who are waiting for rights.
But finally, a court in Milan has recognized the legal union of a gay Italian couple. They contracted a civil partnership in Britain in June 2010 while they had temporary residence there. According to Gay Star News, it's the first time that a same-gender union from abroad has been legally recognized in Italy. The couple has only been identified in news reports by their first names. While the civil partnership of Christian and Federico isn't federally recognized, the couple is now entitled to hospital visitation rights in Milan and to apply for local benefits. Federico noted that he and Christian have been a couple for 8 years. The recognition by the Milan Tribunal is just a little thing, he said, but it's also an important step towards equality.
That's News Wrap for the week ending May 18th, 2013. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced this week by Wenzel Jones and Steve Pride.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep This Way Out on the air at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. I'm Jason Proctor.
And I'm Natalie Peoples.
Is logging on to thiswayout.org more or less likely to make you gay than having two lesbian moms? We'll try to answer that question later in the program. Minnesota voters defeated a proposed constitutional amendment last November to define marriage as exclusively heterosexual. The State House of Representatives passed a bill barely 6 months later to open civil marriage to same-gender couples. This Way Out correspondent Dixie Trichel was at the Capitol in St. Paul on May 13th when the state Senate cast its final vote.
Tell me why you're at the Capitol today.
It's equality. I mean, why would you deny someone the opportunity that they deserve?
My perspective is marriage should be between a man and a woman. There's no way that children can come into the world than that of between a man and a woman in the sacrament of marriage.
I'm Reverend Rebecca Vogel, and I'm here because my partner and I have a six-year-old, and we want to let folks know how much we appreciate the House and the Senate being courageous and taking a vote to recognize our family. I'm also here because, as a pastor, this whole movement and campaign has been about deep respect and love and the freedom to marry and conversations. And so I wanted to bring those values with me here today. And we've been having conversation with supporters and people who are against it, but trying to continue to foster a space of civility and love and respect.
We are delivering justice to the state of Minnesota. I'm R.T. Ryback. I'm mayor of Minneapolis, and I can't even describe how great it feels to have stood in the same place 2 years ago thinking the state was about to vote to limit people's rights, and instead the state took the right vote, and now the legislature did, and I'm overwhelmed. I think anybody who looks around at the city I've been lucky enough to lead knows that there isn't a single block in the city of Minneapolis that hasn't been made dramatically better by members of a community that finally has equal rights. It is, to me, one of the core civil justice issues that we'll ever face in our generation, and I can't think of any more clarity than a state going 360 degrees in about 2 years. And that says everything about all the members of this community just looking people in the eye and saying, this is me, this isn't some stranger, this isn't some other, this is me. And that's what is beautiful. I'm really happy.
When will you get married? All of us are going to be able to be married as of August 1st if we want to. My partner and I were legally married in California in that brief window of time on July 4th, 2008. So we're not exactly sure how we're going to mark it here, but that's one of the questions. We've been talking with lots of folks and saying, okay, you're legally married in Canada or you're legally married in Iowa. What are you going to do here? But we know that our daughter's going to be the flower girl, whatever it is.
My name's Tim Robinson, and today we're putting behind us 50 years of my pain and 50 years of people saying no and never. And it can happen, and we can love, and we can be recognized. Our lives are validated now. Our love is validated. It didn't need to be, but now we have the rights and protections for each other.
Now we can legally, in Minnesota, my home state, be married.
And that's my partner, Gary Lundstrom.
Dixie Trikle staked out the state capitol in St. Paul for the momentous passage of Minnesota's marriage equality bill. MSNBC's Rachel Maddow tracked the history that led up to it.
On December 9th, 1974, Minnesota State Senator Alan Speer came out on the front page of the Minneapolis Star Tribune. The article read, Alan Speer is a 37-year-old freshman member of the Minnesota Senate, a DFLer, which is the Democratic Farm Labor Party in Minnesota. Alan Speer is an associate professor of history at the University of Minnesota, a respected specialist in Afro-American history. Alan Speer has a doctorate degree from Yale and has written a book on the making of the Chicago Black Ghetto. Alan Speer has long been active in DFL, civil rights, and peace causes, and is ranked as the most liberal state senator in an Americans for Democratic Action survey. Alan Speer also is a homosexual, and as of today, he does not care who knows it. Alan Speer made history that day as one of the first ever openly gay elected officials in this country. That was 1974, that front page story. In the 28 years he ended up serving in the state Senate, partially through his leadership, Minnesota had some landmark achievements in gay rights, including a sweeping anti-discrimination statute passed in 1993. But although they did have some landmark achievements as a state, Minnesota never got around to recognizing marriage equality. Then in the midterm elections in 2010, it was the Republican Party that took control of both chambers of the Minnesota legislature for the first time in 40 years. And with their newfound power, Minnesota Republicans put on the ballot a state constitutional amendment to doubly, triply ban gay marriage once and forever in the state, even though gay marriage wasn't legal there anyway. But Republicans wanted a constitutional ban on same-sex marriage, and they put it on the ballot. And then when it went up for a statewide vote last year in November, it lost. That had never happened before, ever. 31 states had voted on amendments just like that one, and all 31 had voted against marriage equality until that all changed this past November. Minnesotans made history in November when they voted no and they decided not to change their state constitution to ban equal marriage rights. And at the same time, on the same election day, on the same ballot, Minnesota voted to return the control of both houses of their legislature to the Democratic Party, to the DFL. And the Democrats in Minnesota decided that that vote, where the state had said no to banning equal rights, that vote deserved another vote. And so beyond just not banning same-sex marriage, the state, they decided, should legalize same-sex marriage. And last Thursday, the Minnesota House took up the question. It passed by a surprisingly comfortable margin. Even a handful of Republicans voted yes. And that sent it to the state Senate, where yesterday, with a packed rotunda for what everybody anticipated to be a historic day, the Minnesota State Senate debated and then voted. And the Minnesotans who support equal marriage rights ended up doing much better than anybody expected.
Members, please. Please vote yes. Vote yes for freedom. Vote yes for family, for commitment, for responsibility, for dignity. Vote yes for love.
That was Democratic State Senator Scott Dibble, who's an openly gay member of the legislature and who is the man who now holds the same Senate seat that was once held by Alan Speer. Senator Dibble authored the marriage equality legislation, and throughout the whole debate, he wore Alan Speer's campaign pin in tribute. It took 4 hours of debate, and then the same-sex marriage bill passed the state Senate yesterday by a vote of 37 to 30. Lots of votes to spare, even some Republicans. And that makes Minnesota the 12th state in the country to recognize marriage equality and the third state to do so just this month. Minnesota's Democratic Governor Mark Dayton signed the bill into law this afternoon, just a few hours ago, on the steps of the state capitol.
That was MSNBC News commentator Rachel Maddow.
Hi, I'm Cleve Jones, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. An informed community is a strong community.
Oops. While much of the U.S. seems to be on a steady roll into a future of equality, some segments of society are spinning in a counterclockwise direction. Based in the U.S. Midwest, Mission America has been designated a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. Its president and founder, Linda Harvey, spewed this screed recently on her weekly radio show.
Why don't you be like me? Why don't you step and see? Why don't you hate who I hate, kill who I kill to be free?
I've gotten calls over the years from parents who are brokenhearted because a young son or daughter has revealed a homosexual preference. My role is not to be a psychologist, but I try to share some resources with parents who are coping with such a tough situation, and they often share with me that pornography played a part, particularly with boys, in convincing them to believe they are gay. But usually by the time this comes out, the feelings and fantasies have been nurtured for years. It seems to me that in the present climate where schools, Hollywood, and even the top leaders in our country are all busy selling homosexuality to kids, that we have to watch those other deceptive influences that can chime in on top of all this to stir feelings in a young person that were not in play before. Internet pornography can be the kerosene on an already simmering fire of adolescent hormones and confusion, and these feelings can bring them to precisely the wrong conclusion. Manipulating feelings in the wrong direction is what pornography does anyway. Homosexual-themed pornography is extremely accessible to young people if they ever visit any websites covering the gay agenda as news. For instance, if your child was doing a report on same-sex marriage, just researching the political issue and visiting sites that are sympathetic to the social and political goals of the homosexual movement may quickly bring them in touch with explicit images, because many of the homosexual news blogs have soft porn, gay dating sites, or worse, as ads. So what is the reaction of your son or daughter to such graphic images? If they feel a curiosity, it may start a process of wondering if they could be homosexual. This is not true, of course, but the really tragic thing is they are not likely to share this question with you, the parent. It just seems too personal. If they follow up and visit these sites, some will experience sexual feelings and mistake these for the pervasive fiction of some inborn gay identity. After all, isn't this the message kids get everywhere, that some of you are destined for homosexuality and there's nothing you can do about it, so just go with it and be proud? All of this, of course, is a lie. Adolescents will feel sexual feelings because they are in puberty, and erotic images can evoke, in an often unhealthy way, a human sexual response.
Linda Harvey's sugar-coated hate speech and bizarre distortions fly in the face of the lived experience of real LGBT families. An 18-year-old told one such story when a Nevada State Assembly committee heard testimony in support of marriage equality on May 9th.
My name is Riley Roberts, and my life is amazing. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you about the issue of gay marriage and how it affects my life. What issue? I see no issue. I was born in Reno, Nevada, 18 years ago. And guess who was there? My mom, Pamela Roberts, and Gretchen Miller. My loving parents. And who was there to watch me take... parents. And who can I talk to when I need anything? My two loving parents. And who will be there to see me walk across the stage next month and receive my honors diploma? My two gay loving parents who have been together for 22 years. They have been with me on my journey through life, and they have supported me through everything. They take me camping, fishing, hunting, everything I could ever want to do. They provide everything for me. My mother, Gretchen, has been paying taxes paying into Social Security for at least 40 years. But if she dies, my mom, Pam, will not receive those survivor spouse benefits. Why? Because the government doesn't recognize their relationship and as a marriage. They're denied the rights, the freedoms, and the ability to be a full and equal citizen of the United States of America and this great state of Nevada. I love them very much, and I want them to have the same rights that I and my friends have. Some people on the opposing side that think that children are deprived of a father or mother figure if the same-sex couple has raises a child. But when I look at my life and compare it to others of my friends, I see no difference. I am not missing out on anything. I have knowledge and opportunity and like any other child. I can even tie my own tie.
KBOO Station Navigator Report, May 17th, 2013. KBOO's strategic planned goal of being a regional media center is becoming a reality. At a recent gathering I attended in Ashland, Oregon, of Oregon community radio stations, I suggested several activities for the newly formed Oregon Community Media Consortium to collaborate on, with KBOO assuming a mentor and leadership role. The emerging OCM will partner to produce statewide programming with content supplied by contributing community stations, and KBOO will produce the final piece. We will pursue grant funding for a shared part-time reporter stationed in Salem to cover legislative issues. Each community station is receiving underwriter training and information from KBOO to begin raising business support and revenue for their station efforts. And perhaps the most exciting collaboration is the OCM is going to be able to rebroadcast the 2013 Waterfront Blues Festival in their own communities on their own frequencies, helping to raise money for the Oregon Food Bank and awareness about hunger in our state. This is super exciting, and KBOO is extremely proud and honored to be part of the Oregon Community Media Consortium. Stay tuned for more.
KBOO Community Radio, West Coast Horticulture, and Higher Reasoning Reggae Time are proud to sponsor electro-dub artist Gowdy with Indubious and Higher Reasoning Sound, June 7th at 9 p.m. at the Alhambra Theater, formerly the Mount Tabor Theater. Tickets for this 21 and over show are on sale now at brownpapertickets.com. $1 from each ticket sold goes directly to KBOO. That's Gowdy with Indubious and Higher Reasoning Sound, June 7th at the Alhambra Theater, 4811 Southeast Hawthorne in Portland.
Have you heard about the Melting Pot Silent Mobile Dance Parties?
Silent dance. Doesn't sound very fun.
Actually, it's a lot of fun. Picture 200 people dancing with headphones to the same music. The Melting Pot Radio Show will have a series of silent dance parties from 8 to 10 p.m. Tuesdays in Portland parks and public spaces. That's Tuesdays from 8 to 10 p.m. For more information and this week's location, go to kboo.fm/silent dance parties.
FM, this is KBOO. The name of the show is called The Melting Pot. Starting out a little bit early tonight. Usually Hard Knock Radio is taking place right now, but we were extending it for the silent dance party that you just heard about. Unfortunately, today's weather was a little extreme and probably won't make much of a dance party, so we're going to be moving the dance party out to next Tuesday. But since we already had things switched around, we are going to be doing a three-hour melting pot tonight. I've let a lot of you know over social media and whatnot, but if you have any friends that are fans of the show or KBOO, please give them a ring or a text and let them know that this is going on. It is an extended version of the melting pot. We have a great show planned for you this evening. The Beloved lineup just got announced earlier today. We're going to have the founder of the festival in here a little bit later to talk about some of the artists that you might not be that familiar with a little more in depth. I'm going to be blending a bunch of the other artists together and giving you different aspects of what's going to be happening over at the festival, as well as a bunch of brand new music. So right now we're listening to something from Kaliko. The name of this track is called 160. Still got a lot of great stuff coming up for you. We're going to get to some new music from Corio. He's a local producer. Still got a bunch of stuff coming in from Kaya Centilla, Plantre. We're going to get to some Blue Tech a little bit later, probably some Random Rab. So it's going to be another good night over here at the Melting Pot. A couple things I wanted to let you know about is the Village Building Convergence is taking place next week. They can still use volunteers in some positions, and I'll be able to tell you where those positions are a little bit later in the show. Also, if you don't know what the Village Building Convergence is, it's something that goes on in Portland once a year. It takes about a week long, and there's all kinds of workshops on building community. Whether you want to build something out of cob or learn how to do some urban farming or really whatever it happens to be. I went a couple years ago. Actually, I try and go as often as possible and end up learning a little something every time. Built a cob house, took a break, and learned a whole bunch of stuff about chickens all at the same time. So it's really great. It's a community experience. You get to build these things with a bunch of different people, learn a whole bunch of new skills, and they are things that you'll be able to use throughout the rest of your life. So that's VBC. That's coming up next week. We're actually going to be throwing a big party on the 31st. That is going to be a decentralized dance party, 4 hours long. That's Friday the 31st. And I will be back with more information about that as well. I'm pretty sure we had a promo around here to play for you too, so stay tuned for that. This is 90.7 FM KBOO. We are community radio. That means that you are the ones